Oh, hello.
Oh, hi there, Ryan.
How are you in this fine Tuesday?
Me and my breast pump are humming along quite lovingly. Lovingly, good God.
Loveringly.
It's sunny. It's beautiful. I'm in good spirits, and
That's
that's
wonderful.
I'm gonna take that. I'm gonna take it. How are you doing?
I'm well. I just gyrotonic'd. And now I'm here recording with you. It's always so fascinating, and I'm never like I don't want to like, because it's like the second class that I've taken, like interrupt and be like, wait, why are we doing it this way? There's like
You
a
should. That's a good way to get to make friends.
sure. Because there's some like real obsession about shoulders down in like every position possible, which is like okay, but at some point my shoulders have to go forward if I'm reaching in front of me. Like I think what they're after is some amount of like traction through the arm. But it feels like something that I wouldn't be able to figure out unless I was on the machine alone, like trying different ways of doing each movement to like, but maybe that's just how my learning process might be.
Okay, so here's the thing. I think
And therefore,
everybody's
it is
like,
correct.
everybody's all fucking up in arms about and drop your shoulders, drop your, soften your shoulders, length, because I think that it comes from just an aesthetic desire to have a long neck. I think that it's like, I
Sure.
think it's an oversimplified, weird aesthetic gesture. And
Sure.
someone could argue with me and be like, no, it's the people who cram their shoulders up by their ears and they're tense. And it's like, okay, well, if they're tense, the best way to unwind it isn't to just create another weird postural
Another
habit
weird
of like,
muscle habit. And what I was thinking the whole time while I was doing it was like, oh, okay. There, the lower portions of the muscles between the shoulder blades, as well as my lower traps, like that is not something that's clear in my awareness. And if I want to move my shoulders down without kind of over gripping through the spinal muscles, then I have to find a new set of engagements. And none of this was reaching overhead, because reaching overhead, your shoulders have to go up. No question about it. But it's just interesting to have like a whole other like movement aesthetic that is desired, and to have to be like, wait, okay, what do you want me to do with my arms now? You want me to do what with my foot? I can't quite, and now I'm doing it with resistance, so it's like even almost even harder to coordinate all of that. But it's fascinating in like trying to just see where I can initiate things from.
God, I love everything about this. Just imagining you like really listening to the teacher and like, okay, well, they said this, they must mean this, they must mean this action, and this comes from here. And like a slight furrow in your brow, just a slight furrow. Whereas if I were next to you, I'd be like, awesome, I get to swing the wheels. I really want to come. So
Just to
let's, we,
observe.
can we, yes. Just say that you took your nanny with you, and I'll just stand there with your bag of snacks. No, but I want to come sometime, and then I want to podcast about it. Hey, we got derailed. We have a strict,
We have a
we hit.
strict, which you chastised me for, so I went in without a reference to our strict process.
Okay, back on track. Back on track.
So we got two emails that we thought were worth diving into. Oh, and this is episode 100.
Oh my God.
Yes. At least I think it is. No, it is. It's episode 100, yeah.
And we don't have any cake.
No, there's no cake. I had a cookie just now, though.
Ryan, I think I'm going to do. Have you heard of Brightline Eating?
No.
I've been delivered a whole bunch of Facebook ads for them, and they think I'm going to be interested, apparently. But it's no sugar. It's approaching food like you would an addiction. She basically just ripped off Food Addicts Anonymous and
Okay.
Overeaters Anonymous. Anyways, but I'm thinking about doing an experimental no flour or sugar month.
Oh, cute.
This is unrelated.
To
Go back.
anything that we were going to talk about. But let's unpack dietary and addiction things next week. Can we put
Okay.
a can we put a
I'll Slack us a note.
yeah, put a little marker there. Okay.
God,
So
we're a mess. Okay,
the oh
diet.
wait, this is the wrong email. Wait. I don't want to read that email out loud. Okay, so Deanna Schwartz just emailed us a few days ago and stated a topic which I'm sure is on many people's minds at the moment. And she said, "Hey, Kate and Ryan, so happy you have unrolled to connect me to your music since I moved to LA last year. I assume you both heard of the rage of Aloe V, Dana Falsetti, and the there's some number that's spelled out here that is very long, meaning a multitude of sub-stories and opinions coming from that. Would you consider discussing on an upcoming episode?" And then she kindly attached the links to the articles, which was super helpful because I just tried to was having trouble looking through Elephant Journal to find them. So thank you. You know, we both have seen all of the things about this.
Thank you, and I love you for sending the links. It's very
Yeah.
thoughtful.
So
Okay, can I
we
start,
will
Ryan? Because I
well,
just want to start.
let me just but we will put the links in the show notes so that people, and it probably is worthwhile to pause if you can right now, if you haven't already read both, and read both, because the discussion might make no sense whatsoever without the background of the articles. Okay, Kate, go.
Okay, so the thing that is, there are some major players. And the major players in this, many of them already irritate the living piss out of me.
I feel like you're about to
This
describe some like Game of Thrones scenario,
is.
right?
Bum, 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 bum. Okay, so we've got Dana Falsetti, who is a prominent figure in the body positive yoga community, and she I've been following with great interest for a long time, and she is very outspoken and brave and wonderful, and I love what she's doing. And she's on Instagram and is sort of known for sharing her asana shots of herself scantily clothed often, which I think she's a total rock star for doing. And we could do an entire podcast on that,
Sure.
but we won't. Long story short, she has been gaining notoriety from her programming that she shares online as a yoga teacher. She has a lot of unicorn shapes, and she's in a larger size body.
It's a
You put those
lovely
two things.
Vashistasana that's in the article. Lovely Vashistasana.
Lovely Vashistas. And she teamed up with Cody, so that's player number two in our Game of Thrones. Bom, 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 bom. So Cody, and for a while it was called the Cody app, and they are a platform that films and promotes videos, not just for yogis, but for fitness professionals. And you can buy one class or bundles, and they're just like the answer to the old VHS of a yoga class on VHS, except now it's online. They've worked with tons of famous people. And it was kind of a big deal for the size positive yoga community when Dana put her material up. Jessamyn also did too, who's another awesome player. plus size yogi, and they
who's even... by the way, I listened to the first couple episodes of Jessamine's podcast, and it's quite good. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I'm not sure that it's available at, like, on all the platforms, but you should definitely check it out if you enjoy yoga podcasts. And unpause.
So yeah, they're wonder. They're just awesome. And anyways, they have some material up there, and they also occasionally will promote yoga clothing that covers their asses. And I say it flippantly, in a sarcastic manner, because that brings us to our third player, Alo or Aloe. I don't fucking care.
I've never been quite sure of that.
It is a clothing company that is famous for the yoga leggings that look like you're wearing leg warmers. So it's one piece of fabric. Well, technically it's two, but they're sewed together. So it looks like two separate pieces, but it's one. And they are also known for their social media and marketing campaigns that pivot around exceptionally thin, exceptionally white, and usually exceptionally blonde yoga teachers in just like maddening shapes, usually in like acro shapes and like partner work yoga, hyper mobility, and litheness is emphasized in their brand. Now, to be completely transparent, I years ago bought a pair of pants from them, size extra large. And this was when I was at my like thinnest for me. So it was an extra large, meaning if you're a size like between 12 and 16, depending on your proportions, you probably could have squeezed yourself into these pants. And I did. I squeezed myself in, but it was like bursting at the seams. And the pants were like crying uncle, but but they were cute. They were cute. And they were, to be completely candid, I thought that they were not the highest quality. Like, the seams fell apart. They were thin. But I thought that they were cute. I enjoyed them. And then I never bought anything else from them again, because as most yoga brands go, they stop making at size large mostly. They actually might be. That might have been a size large I bought. Some go up to an extra large, but large. Now, that is like a pivotal point in the conversation, and we're probably going to spend more time on it. But the other players that I just want to touch on in this are Kina McGregor. I'll let Ryan do a recap of her, and Elephant Journal.
Yes. And particularly, we should add with Cody that, so this began with a long, letter that was published, or not letter, article that was published, I believe, first on Kina McGregor's Instagram. Kina McGregor is an Ashtanga yoga teacher. It is worth going to read these articles, because I think it's really interesting to compare what Kina wrote and what Paul, the founder of Cody, wrote, and to notice, and correct me if I'm wrong, Kate, but I haven't actually seen anything written by Dana.
I think she's, because of the litigation.
Yeah, exactly.
Not, but she, I'm sure as soon as she can, she will.
But I want to background my bias here, having managed yoga teachers both locally and, done business dealings with yoga teachers, some of whom are, very famous and kind of at the level of Kina. Dealing with, let's just say it this way. A lot of yoga teachers are not very good when it comes to having a discussion about money, or when having a discussion about business. And then there is this thing that happens when you begin to talk about business where, rightfully or wrongfully, they sort of shrug it off, like, oh, I don't want anything to do with that. It's just yoga. And then when shit hits the fan and they realize that they didn't get what they want, then they tend to get really vicious about it. Now, I will say, because I could say the same, you know, if you read through Kino's thing, there is this tinge of, you know, two women being taken advantage of by a big business. And I agree that there might be some tinge of that in this. However, I also have worked with yoga teachers who are very, very clear about what they want in terms of contracts, not even like formal business contracts, but just in terms of the agreement. Like, if I'm going to come and teach, which is the same thing as if I'm going to come and record this video for you, right? These are the things that I need. And if I were ever to go back to them and say, you know what, we really just can't do that, they were very clear as to, well, that's a deal breaker. I can't do it if that's not there. Or, okay, well, what about this? Could we do this? Like, there was a very clear conversation about agreement. And I am, you know, both suspicious about the Kino side of things and suspicious about the Cody side of things, because I just feel like there's not the full story being both sides are trying to play to the, like, it's all yoga end of things. Which, yes, it is all yoga, and part of yoga is clarity. And if we're going to practice and teach yoga in a capitalist system, whether we like that or not, the yogic thing to do is to have a sense of, to be really clear. And there are a lot of barriers to standing up and making those statements of clarity and to engaging in a clear business conversation, especially when these big companies get involved. So I don't want to diminish that. But I just feel like we're not getting the whole story. And the people who could tell us the whole story are in the midst of litigation and probably can't speak about it anyway. Does that make sense?
So to break that down a little bit, my first gut reaction when I read Kino's post article thing and then the response to it was, I got so mad. I was like, fuck Alo. Because my experience sitting at the front desk of a yoga studio, actually with a local company, I'm going to say the name of that company, called Crane and Lion. They showed up and they wanted to give some sample clothes for us to consider at what was then called Back Bay Yoga. They wanted us to try it on and then eventually sell it. And I, you know, she had brought in a sample size like small. And it was super small. Actually, it wasn't a small because they don't, at the time, they weren't doing small, medium, and large. I don't know if they do. They were doing actual numerical sizes, which is super stupid to do for athletic clothes because you basically said, here, stock all these sizes. Yeah. Anyways, that's neither here nor there. I think I mentioned it to her and she was like, I don't know. And I said, what size do you go up to? And she said, 10. And I said, you know, the average woman in America is now size 14. What goes into your decision making about only going up to a size 10? And I got a, you know, we're a small company, you know, costs, blah, blah, blah. We wanted to start small and see if we could get leverage. And then, you know, that was it. It was sort of like a non-answer. And then, So the person that was going to be looking at the clothes and trying them on and making that decision was just coming back from maternity leave. And long story short, through the conversation that was happening at the front desk, someone says, "Oh, those are going to go to so and so. She's off of maternity leave right now." And the woman who brought them in looked at me and said, "Oh, so these aren't going to fit her either." And I just had this moment of, oh, Jesus Christ. Does everybody that goes into making yoga clothes, like, are they all like just cruel and completely myopic? And like every other term I'd like to use is just mean and not helpful. This is a very real problem. And I think it's, if you are listening right now and you're a thin, able-bodied yogi, and you don't care that the clothes you buy cap out at a certain size, I think you're part of the problem. I'm just gonna let that sit for a second, because that's part of the arguments that happen and untangle in this larger issue with Dana, Kino, and Alo.
Also, I kind of and again, I know that there is probably some level of litigation, staying silent type of thing going on. My after I read both articles, I was actually on the bus back from Watertown when I when the response from Paul came out. And I like put down my phone, and then like 5 minutes later, I was like, "Wait, wasn't this about some woman named Dana?" Like it for whatever reason, the when I read both letters, I was like, "Wait a second, when did this become about Kino?" Like in
Interesting, yeah.
like it just felt like
Because Kino is working on behalf of Dana, quote unquote, because Dana probably can't say anything, so Kino is stepping in to tell the story.
and that might be okay, but there is part of me that's like, okay, so we're just gonna let. I respect Kino as someone who has a consistent practice of yoga, but in terms of the way that she presents yoga, I question a lot.
That's fair. Can I question one thing too, so that we have two things that we're questioning in this premise? My thing is, I thought about it from the perspective of Dana. If somebody came to me, this actually did happen to me, and I ended up turning it down because there was like no money involved. But
Sure.
like, if someone was like, "Hey, do you want to make a video? And it's going to get in front of a bunch of people, and you're going to get to get you're going to get to get a larger group of people that maybe don't feel welcome in the yoga community to practice, and we're going to do it online through this platform." I'd be psyched, especially if you told me, "Hey, and you're going to be able to pay some of your bills from the work you do to do that." It'd be awesome. And I have to be honest with myself, if I was handed a really dense contract, legal contract, I would probably hire a lawyer and go through some of these potential eventualities. I would think to myself, "Hey, now what happens if they get bought? What happens to my material in 8,000 different scenarios?" is what I would want to know. That would be important to me personally to know. And I'm sure that if I had gone through that exercise, one of the things may have come up of, what if this gets bought by a company that I don't believe in? What course of action do I reasonably have? Now, just because I would have thought of those things doesn't mean that everybody would have.
Yes, that's very
But
true.
I do wonder,
Or
like, was
felt
she.
empowered enough for whatever reason, be it financial or otherwise, to actually step up. Because here, like even when YogaWorks took over Back Bay, there was something in me that was like, when you're operating with someone who you care about and it's their business and you're trying to negotiate in such a way that like you get what you need and it doesn't like run the studio into the ground. Like it still makes financial sense for the place that you are working. There's one negotiation that happens, but when there's a large, investor-backed company that you're dealing with, like sometimes there is a like, especially if you're used to just kind of teaching yoga around in studios, there sometimes isn't the thought of being like, well, I could just ask for what I really want. Like I could just ask and they could say no. But every time that I've gone to and gone in with that, like, no, this is what I need. It's become very clear whether this is a company or this is a place where I want to be. And I know it's like there's so many intersecting things here because it is totally different, depending on someone's, if I was in financially dire straits and someone offered me a bunch of money to go record a video, I'd have to think twice about turning it down, so, we don't really know what the situation was, but I do I don't know. When it comes to Dana's story, I don't know. I guess I don't really know Dana's story because it seems to be covered up by Kino's interaction with Cody. And this is the thing that I'm trying to separate out is like, okay, so there's a relationship between Dana and Allo slash Cody, and then there's a relationship between Kino and Allo slash Cody, and the conversation seems to be very focused around the different payment terms that Kino was offered, and also Kino's own establishment of a yoga like TV network, which is now called Om Stars, I think. And I'm really torn because I do think that there is a role for really good online content. I really do. I think if we're really about supporting, if I'm going to really be about supporting people in practicing on their own, then having online content so they don't have to try and remember everything that was said in class ever, is super, super helpful. A full on yoga TV network with all of these other teachers. Sometimes I'm just like, you know what? And I don't know what the deals are with those teachers, but there is enough technology out there that everyone can just fucking do this on their own. And if there were some like collective model where it was like, okay, I'm gonna link all of these channels together into one particular package, then that would be great. But I feel like it's a real slippery slope from someone producing really good, really worthwhile, really high quality online content to it turning into another big business in itself, as opposed to an adjunct to the teaching of yoga to the people that are in front of you. And you have to consider exactly like you said, like, yeah, someone goes, okay, I'm paid, I'm going to pay you a couple thousand dollars to fly out to Seattle for a week and record 12 different videos that are going to be put in a package, and you're going to get paid this much, and then maybe once they're published, you'll get another, whatever the deal is, and then you have to weigh the like, okay, well, they're going to produce it, they're going to put all this together for me, and I'm going to get paid this amount of money right now, as opposed to like, well, I could just get myself some. And it's going to certainly have a bigger mailing list to get that out to. and get you out to.
It's not just manliness, it's the legitimacy behind the brand. It's feeling like, especially if you're from a community that's dismissed, to have quote unquote belief and backing of something like Cody is exciting. It's like, of course you could do it on our own, but there's like benefits to having someone else say, hey, look at this.
Sure, but then I think, but I still think then you have to, like, any agreement there that I feel like would be fair would run the platform into the ground. Anything that, like, actually really, truly valued financially the work that the yoga teacher has to do to develop that, if you were to figure out some business plan where that was honored and the truth of how much money it takes to, like, have an office and have all of the technology that it takes and the customer service that it takes to run a thing like that, you'd have to sacrifice one of those two things, or you'd have to charge an amount that would really just not make sense for people. Does that make sense?
No, yeah, I hear you.
And you know, maybe we're getting away from the core of this, but one thing that, like, it's very easy to turn these, you know, business disputes into, like, a personal squabble. You know, I'm not, and of course they're intertwined. There's no way to separate that out. But I've come across yoga teachers behaving real badly on the business side of things so many times that I'm always a little suspicious when someone's, you know, calling someone out and then, you know, tagging, like, a bunch of other, presumably yogis who are sponsored by Aloe or Cody, Instagrams to go sort of yell at them for being involved with Cody, presumably, possibly to get them to come over to Omstars. You know, like, you don't know what the, like, Kino's a shrewd businesswoman. Like, it's,
yeah, when we unpeel the layers, the energy should be focused on shaming Alo's size policy, which is what Dana was.
Exactly. No, you know what? That's it. At first I was like, why is she emphasizing the sizing? And you just brought it back around for me. Like, that's what this is supposed to be about.
Yeah, because, like, it's, like, almost not about, like, shame on Cody, but whatever, I don't care. Like, yeah, I care about, you know, if what Cody was saying was true, which is they really were going to take Dana's image, you know, and give, you know, remove it so that she wasn't associated with that, that's great. You know, good for you, Cody, if that's what was going to happen. And, you know, Cody also, hey, you know, it's always an opportunity when there's a merging of companies to, like, look at core values like that and to ask questions, because Cody is purporting to, like, offer things to a large group of people, and Alo is assuredly not. I wonder, though, if, since we have lost sight of it, not you and I, but sort of the larger conversation, like you said, is sort of obfuscated by Kino's, you know, part in the conversation.
She's a controversial figure in the yoga world. Like, whether it
and
be,
yet we wouldn't be having this conversation without her. So, like, yeah, I don't know that we'd know about it. And that's part of the problem too. Like, I wonder, and I'm not victim blaming here. Yeah. But I wonder, would there have been an opportunity for Dana to creatively sort of say big fuck you to Alo and the way I would have considered. So, like, sometimes I just like to imagine myself in this scenario where I'm Dana and I just find out that motherfucking Alo is part of it and I can't buy clothes for them and now they own my company and I don't really want anything to do with promoting them. It's kind of like which is something I can relate with. What if, like, for me, it would have been real fun to go on social media with a pair of ALO pants and, like, demonstrate trying to get my fat ass into them, and then, like, sort of talk about the larger problem of, like, a company that says what it says about women's bodies.
Yeah.
Like, she, you know, I'm sure, but unless she was contractually not able to do that, you know, like, now,
which she probably, I mean, it may not have been contractual. It may have just been that her lawyer advised her to not say anything, which would be
I meant before she had
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if she was like, hey, I'm just going to leave my shit where it is. I'm going to keep my relationship with Cody, but, you know, I'm going to be a rabble rouser and complain about the relationship Cody has with ALO.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is where it gets, because again, it's just like, it's really hard to parse out what the fuck's going on here. And, you know, I like, a friend of mine last night was kind of like, you know, this is all such bullshit, and I just want to teach and, like, keep my head down. And I so sympathize with that, but each of us in our own way is going to eventually run up against this in some way, shape, or form. The just sort of all of these, like, larger venture capital backed interests in yoga, like, we will not be able to put our heads down and just teach. I don't want to, like, stress about it, which I haven't been, to the point where it distracts me from practice and teaching and, you know, offering something that I think is valuable to people. But also, if part of my practice isn't to be socially engaged in the forming of something that may or may not be able to be called a yoga community at some point, which does not exist right now, then, you know, I gotta engage with some of this stupidity. Like, you know, it is important for people to have clothing that they fit into, and it is important for people to understand that, you know, yoga is beyond adaptable for any body. Like, really, really, truly. And it doesn't help, and I know I may have lost the thread here for a second, it doesn't help that when I look at the Cody website, and this is where I would say that, you know, it's great to have people like Dana, people like Jessamine, people in larger bodies on these apps, but I'm looking at this site and I see Dylan Warner in a huge Urdhva Dhanurasana grabbing one foot. I see the whole first line going across is some extreme pose. And in fact, there is maybe 1, 2, 3, 4 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Like, maybe 9 of the teachers I see on here are, their, like, profile picture is something that is not some major feat of strength or flexibility. And, like, what's fucking wrong with just having someone's headshot? Like, Sean Corin's headshot on here is just her and her amazing hair and both hands on her heart. Like, if I was scanning through here, I'd be like, ooh, who's that? I want to take a class from that, not the person who can, you know, touch their foot to their head. Like, the way that it's yes about size, but it's also then how we portray what it is that we're doing in practice. Because, you know, today I literally just I walked all over the fucking town yesterday, and I sat on my floor this morning and literally just massaged my calf into my foot on each leg for like 30 minutes, and then like did a down dog, and then lied down and did some breathing. Like that was it. And I just and I don't want to take anyone's fancy shapes away from them either. Like that's the struggle that I get into. I would be really curious to ask people if those fancy shapes are what they do daily. And for some of them it may be, but I would doubt that.
Here's another question. Why the fuck didn't Alo take this as an opportunity to say, you know what? You're right.
Exactly.
We want to make more money and make clothes that are going to fit larger women.
Yeah.
Because larger women have money. And every time the statistics come out, the average woman in a size country is going up. It's not
Yeah.
going down. And that's another topic for another podcast. But we're getting bigger as a culture. We are getting bigger. That's a reality. So by staying the same as a clothing company or as a brand of any sort and not accommodating the fact that the population is gaining weight and not accommodating them and treating them with respect and dignity and inclusivity is to say, oh, no. We're exclusive. We're better than, and we're the only ones that deserve X, Y, or Z. The rest of you are unworthy of love, essentially, on some
Yeah,
level. On
on
some
some
level, when
level.
we unpack it. So I always think brands are so stupid when they don't look around and seize it as a freaking money-making opportunity, because most of the population can't fit in your freaking clothes, Alo. And guess what? They want to practice yoga. They are practicing yoga.
Yes, not even like people, more and more people are, despite also having the average size going up, you also have more and more people practicing yoga. So like at some point those two things, intersect, and it's like this is a no-brainer. Especially like Aloe's a fairly big, it's not like there's some little startup at this point. Like to just start making bigger sizes, I don't think would
But
be.
all the other freaking brands are doing it. I'm not saying they're doing it well, but like Athleta, you can't buy plus size in stores, which shame on you. Every time I walk into a store and have a conversation, I'm like, still haven't carried, not going to carry it in store. Well, we don't have the space. Well, you do have the space for the extra smalls. How many people you got walking in buying an extra small? Fuck you. You've got the space. My fat Irish ass, you've got the space. So I think it's a bullshit excuse, but that you can at least go online and buy it. And there's more and more companies that are providing plus size clothing, big ones. So there is no excuse for Alo. The companies that choose not to do it, they do it because they want to distinguish themselves as a brand that does not provide clothing for quote unquote average looking bodies. And that's why it's even more important that you reflect on your closet. Like most of my friends are like thin yogis, and I'm talking to them right now. Like, is your closet full of spiritual gangster? Well, part of its profit making model is that it does not clothe fat people. Because you know why? People will be less likely to think the brand is worth spending $50 for a tank top if they see somebody fat in that tank top.
And also here in the so Aloe is owned by two men, Danny Harris and Marco DeGeorge, and there was some mention, I can't find it exactly in Cody's in Kino's article about them having some kind of not so pleasant interactions with them. I totally believe that. And it we are, just to be clear to everybody, Aloe is not like the top of the pyramid. That there's a parent company, Bella Canvas, So this is a brand that actually really does have the resources to make clothing that is better. Also, I just don't like their clothing.
No, you know, it's fun reading their home, the letter from the founders. ALO is a place where people are equally respected regardless of gender, race, beliefs, or sexual orientation, as long as you're a size 10 and under.
Is this in the About Us on the Allo website, or where did you find
This
this?
is Page's founders, but it's the first thing that came up,
Oh,
so it must
okay.
be the most trafficked right now
Okay.
from Danny and Marco.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, in the same thing, it's like this conversation people might be tired of hearing because, you know, we spent there, you know, a few years back, everybody was like sort of paying attention to it with Lululemon because Lululemon,
Yeah.
the founder at the time, said openly, "I don't clothe women that look like that." And then we all sort of forgot about it. And like yoga teachers still want to be Lululemon ambassadors, which is breathtaking because, like, what a
Yeah.
good way to say fuck you to your students. Because, by the way, your students are large. Look at your classroom. Look at your classroom.
Yeah.
Or at least the back two rows of your classroom,
Yeah.
if you have a big class. You know, it's saying, I'm glad this is happening. It sucks that it's happening to Dana, and it sucks we can't hear her voice.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we're having this conversation again because I forgot how angry I still am, and I forgot how we collectively kind of forgot about how this is a problem. But you're right, where the fuck does Kino come into play?
Yeah. That's the thing that just, it doesn't feel like it's, I don't know, it's just something doesn't feel quite right about it. Ready for a hard transition.
No, I mean, I really want to just like continue to rage with you on this, but we'll pause because I think things will get unpacked and we'll be
Yes.
able to talk more as this unfolds. But in the meantime, a call to action after this little portion of our conversation, a call to action is reflect on your closet because our closets are political decisions. Every purchase we make is a vote.
Yeah.
And, you know, finding yoga clothes that are in line with your values is hard to do. And that is like the most obnoxious upper middle class white thing I've said in a really long time. But it's true. Every purchase we make it is a vote and
Yeah.
matters. So look at your closet and reflect on how you feel about those choices. And I'll do the same thing because I got a pair of ALO pants in there that I'm going to donate. Although nobody's going to want them because they're garbage and see-through and crotch because my fat ass wore them out.
God.
All right, transition.
Transition. It's our 100th episode.
100 episodes. That means for at least 100 hours, Ryan.
More
You and
than
I have
that.
you and I have had at least 150 hours of conversation about yoga.
It's true. It's quite, I didn't think of it in that terms, but it is, yeah, it's something. And I just wonder where to go from here. Because there's a fine line for me between adding to the noise, and having conversation. And last week I feel like I was pretty firm on, like, hey, let's just pull the plug.
Yeah, and for our regular listeners, this happens every 3 months, so as you know.
It should happen every, you know what I mean? Like,
You're right, you're right.
it's a worthwhile inquiry.
You're
But of
right, you're
course, I
right.
had, a number of people, both via email and in person, sort of say rather affirming things about listening to us rant on about the things we rant on about. And so I'm kind of in a, I don't know, I'm just kind of thinking about what is the best, what is the best way forward.
I'll tell you what that is.
Okay, you're just gonna tell me what it is. I get it.
No.
I see. Yeah.
I actually don't know. I mean, I, unlike you in this department, am very cuppa in that it takes me a lot to get going, but once that I get going, you can just set it and forget it. Look up
Yeah.
and 25 years later, I'll still be sitting at this computer talking to you.
Yes.
And you are a little bit more like period of time burning bright and then rest. Period of time burn bright, then rest, which is pitta. Is that correct? Is that fair?
Yes, that is my preferred working style slash the, you know, habit that I fall into. I'm trying to get it to the point where I don't get to the point of crashing as the barometer for when to rest. But that's an ongoing challenge. And you know, I guess I just wonder, you know, is the solution to kind of modulate the number of times that we're doing having these conversations each month? Is it to and you know, be able to then maybe actually schedule times where we can sit down for longer periods of time so we can really, really unpack things? You know, because we could have gone on for another hour about the clothing thing and related topics. I just want to make sure that you know the whole purpose, and correct me if you feel differently, but the whole purpose was to record conversations that we would be having anyway. And conversations that, you know, were not necessarily safe
Yeah.
or clean.
Like, let's close the door. Can anybody hear us? No? Okay, good. Now we can talk.
Exactly. And to be a little bit more transparent about the fact that we were having those conversations because we believed that other people were having those internal conversations and perhaps didn't have someone, certainly not someone inside the yoga sphere that they could have those conversations with. So that for me is kind of one thing. The other thing is that you know, when we started this, you did not have a child, and our lives were very different. And I don't want the recording and then, you know, all of the work that I do on the back end to take away time from practice and studying because I'm in the midst of learning some pretty awesome stuff and I feel like I need more time on the mat to like absorb and work with that. So I'm wondering if we don't just cut the just half what we're doing each month. And make sure that when we're recording those two things, that we get to be in person and we have a nice stretch of time to really unpack whatever it is that we want to unpack on those days. And, you know, the other thing is, people are, would certainly be able to adjust the amount that they give on Patreon if they felt like that was necessary. But I would also adjust it to say that if we do get enough Patreon followers so that we could actually pay ourselves for the episodes, then I would feel comfortable moving back to a weekly format. Like right now, we're at a point where we're just covering our expenses, which is great, and I'm super grateful for everybody. And the expenses don't change per episode, so there's not like that barrier for us. It's the same hosting costs. It's the same, you know, same everything. No matter how many we put out on a given month. So, if the answer might be to set some goal by which, okay, if we reach this much in sponsorship from our listeners, then we go to 3 times a month, and if we reach this much, we go to 4 times a month.
Yeah, I like that.
Just so that and I know there are going to be some people out there that are like, why are you talking this out on microphone? Well, because I think that's in the interest of being transparent.
Oh, yeah, that's the whole premise of what we do, is every awkward nose-picking, administrative and philosophical meandering happens on air.
Yes. And oh crap, I just forgot what I was gonna say.
Well, long story short, I think, Ryan, we should put a pin in it, but the we I think we're both in agreement that until we can
Financially
figure out,
support.
yeah, until I mean the weekly thing will happen when we can when it makes sense for us in terms of like being able to pay our bills and also have time to breathe. We can do it weekly, but until we get to that point, we're going to shoot for every other week and be a little bit softer to ourselves about our production schedule.
Yes, I think that that is a wise, and I think in doing so, we could schedule it so like this episode isn't going to come out till next Monday, and there'll probably be like 20 other responses of note to this Kino thing. So we will also try to arrange our release schedule so that when there are these like sort of pertinent matters that come up like immediate, that there's not this kind of like lag time in
Yeah,
response.
and as always, we reserve the right to change our minds.
Yes.
So if there's something that's urgent and we need to post about it, we'll find a time and we'll do it. But
Exactly,
that
exactly.
makes sense to me. Cool. All right, hard pivot.
Hard
Read.
pivot. Oh, because we had another email.
Yeah,
That's
read the email because it's awesome.
okay. So, I don't know whether this person would want to be named, so I'm not going to say their name, but we really appreciate you very much. Hold on, let me find the right one. Okay. Hi, Ryan and Kate. Here's a question for you. I've recently noticed teachers at some public classes I've attended lately refer to what I know as Reverse Warrior II pose as quote unquote peaceful warrior. I know that I should ask those particular teachers, but I thought to ask you because this is a topic I could probably go on and on about how we name some shapes, especially one like rock star, or how we say weird things like flip your dog, and can't remember if you've addressed this on the pod in the past or not. Did I miss some sort of announcement about what we call this pose peaceful warrior slash reverse warrior two, or does it come from somewhere I'm just not familiar with? P.S. Always love the pod. Thanks for your honesty and authenticity.
Wait, did you say their name?
No, I did not.
Okay. Awesome email. I totally agree. And just, I didn't get the memo either, but I do think it's interesting. It happens in waves. Like
You
all
know,
of a
I can
sudden.
tell you exactly how it happened. Peaceful Warrior is something that Dana and the people at Lotus in New York call warrior, reverse warrior, whatever you want to call it. So Jess Ray went into the Lotus training, and then I think maybe Erica too, or I thought I may Erica Borenstein, I may have seen her down at the Lotus training, And so then they start calling it peaceful warrior, then everyone else starts calling it peaceful warrior because teachers, and this is where I might get in trouble, teachers don't practice on their own. So that's how we replicate this, like if someone injects a new name into
Vernacular.
the vernacular, it spreads like wildfire because the way that people get ideas for their classes is, you know, just going to like nobody's necessarily spending time on their own mat. And then it becomes a little bit like that workshop syndrome we always talk about, where when like a guest presenter comes into town and then the next week people try and teach a questionable replication of what they learned in the workshop before they've had time to integrate it. The same thing, but except it's just linguistic, so maybe not as damaging to the practice as a whole. But my simple answer to that is that it comes from Laughing Lotus.
Well, first of all, why is it called that? Because I certainly don't think tipping back in Warrior 2 is intuitively peaceful.
It's just I think it just a branding thing. Lotus is a very branded studio, and you know some would call it a style. I mean, Dana certainly has a distinct style of teaching and practice, and there are certainly things emphasized in at Laughing Lotus Studios that are interesting.
Call to action.
Yes.
I think we should call it ambivalent yoga 2.
Ambivalent.
Warrior 2 to ambivalent yoga 2, Warrior 2.
Yeah, that's yeah. I don't really. Yeah, I guess I just don't really teach that. I certainly would teach someone in Warrior 2 to reach that front arm up as a tool to explore something. But the, you know, I can just sort of picture what she's talking about, the like step forward, come up warrior two, and then reverse warrior, and then
Flip the
side
palm, reach
angle,
up, tip back.
and then you put your hand down on the floor, and then flip around, do Vashistasana, and then flip your dog, and then come back around to three-legged dog pose, and then hop up and do a handstand, and then land into Chaturanga Dandasana, and go up
No.
into up dog, and go back to down dog, and then
No,
step
come
forward.
back through chair, drop into
Oh,
boat
sure.
pose. Boat pose right through to Chaturanga.
Yep. Oh, this is fun. We should just come up with off the cuff vinyasa sequences at the end of it.
Three-legged dog, bend the knee, open the hip, take the knee across the body over to the opposite elbow, kick through fallen triangle. You go.
Open the arm up to the ceiling, sit down, turn around, Marichyasana three.
Yes.
Somehow come into a handstand. Oh, straddle handstand.
No, firefly.
Don't know. Oh, there
Bring
you
the hands back
go.
to the front, hook the knee over, lift the rear caboose. Fire Flotsky. Into Kundinyasana 2.
Yep.
Chaturanga.
Chaturanga.
Palate cleanser.
No, through to Ashtavakasana.
Oh.
And then back. And then Chaturanga.
I'm wicked guilty of the peaceful warrior. I love it. You know why? Because but here's my defense of it. I will defend all of my bag of habits because when I practice at home, I do it.
Sure. Yeah,
Like my
yeah,
nervous
yeah.
tick. I'm like, oh, warrior two. Well, how do I get out of this? Oh, I should tip back and open up my side body. It feels good on my hip. Here we go. And cartwheel the hands down. Totally guilty of it. Not gonna apologize. Like doing it.
That's fine, but notice that you had a distinct reason.
Oh yeah, I like it.
But you also said it feels good on my hip and to lengthen the side of the body.
Yes.
That is a distinct purpose that is worth an action that's worth exploring. You know, and if you happen to be moving through a series of standing poses, then that might be a good place to feel that. So, you know, I have nothing wrong with it, like from a intellectual But it's just like when it becomes this kind of habit without really knowing why, then I start to question a little bit.
I know, which is a good segue for our next topic, which will be habits, dietary restrictions, and lifestyle yoga shit.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
All right, we don't have time for triggers because our life is a trigger.
Yes.
This has been Unrolled. Please continue to give us feedback, emails. We freaking love them. This last
If
batch was
you have
spectacular. Thank you.
some sort of genius idea for the future of Unrolled that we just clearly haven't thought about,
Or if
then
ALO wants to sponsor us.
and we should have said part of the reason is that we've turned down every sponsorship email that we've received because they've felt kind of gross. It's not that we're completely opposed to sponsorship, it's just that
We haven't found the right partner to dance to tango with, if you know what I'm saying.
indeed, indeed. And then it gets tricky because even if we're sponsored by someone we like, if that's some or something that we like, if that something does something fucked up,
I want to be able to talk
I want
about
to be able
it.
to talk about it.
Like, no
So
matter what it is, I want to be able to talk about it.
I think Patreon is the best bet for now. But if you have some other brilliant idea, by all means, email us and we will read your email and probably talk about it, and maybe it'll be on the podcast.
All right.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.